Election means for you, for Rashida Tlaib of Detroit, outspoken supporters of Palestinians, of Lebanese, of against Israel's war on Gaza.
What you have heard over the last year is this community taking a principled position. This was the community in which the Uncommitted Movement was founded and blossomed organically across this country. But what you're hearing from many of our residents, from many of our constituents, from the anti-war, anti-justice movement, or pro-justice movement, excuse me, broadly speaking, is that this is a community that says, if we want to end gun violence and mass shootings in schools within the states, then we must also be willing to not provide a war criminal 2,000-pound J-bombs to decimate every school and university across Gaza. If we want to expand access to healthcare, then we also must be willing to hold to account any government that bombs or decimates every healthcare facility across all of Palestine or across Lebanon. These are the morals and the values that we have. And this is the principal position that we have taken. And this is not just a position that is popular here in the city of Dearborn, but if you look across the polls, across this country, you have seen that the center of America has moved on the issue of Israel and Palestine. And what has yet to be had is the center of the two major political parties in this country to move on the issue as well.
Abdullah Hammoud, I want to thank you for being with us. Mayor of Dearborn, Michigan, just declined to meet with Donald Trump in Dearborn over support of Israel's assault on Gaza, but has not endorsed Kamala Harris, though encourages people to go out and vote. There are apparently six third-party presidential candidates in Michigan. Tune in on election night. That's tomorrow, Tuesday, November 5th, for our Democracy Now! 4-hour election.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
I'm Grace Gooding, Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KBOO, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KBOO.
Good morning, and you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM. I'm Cecil Prescott, and today is the 4th of November, 2024. It is 8.02 a.m., and we are broadcasting from Portland, Oregon. Airroom phone numbers to give us a call, 503-231-8187. And I appreciate all of you and your thoughts and your reflections this time and this morning and every time we have the opportunity to gather and share with one another. So, November 4th is a very important date for me because my niece was born on November 4th, and, you know, she's my only niece, so I love her a lot. But there was something interesting about when she was born, which was always striking for me, and will, you know, in addition to the fact that she was born on November 4th, because all sorts of things were happening on the day she was born. So November 4th was an election day, and lots of things was happening. And on that day, my sister went into labor. I took my nephew to kindergarten, and then she delivered her daughter later on that day. But what I also remember that day was I went to vote, and at that time was still before we had mail-in voting, so I went to the local school where there were people greeting you and checking your names off as you went into the place to vote. And I voted, and I remember walking out of the voting place and walking home and wondering whether or not my sister had given birth. And again, this is before people were connected 24/7. So, you know, if I wanted to find out, I had to find a phone booth on the street somewhere and see if I had enough change to call. But on my way home, someone said, "Reagan won the election." And I'm not sure how they knew that, but it was in the afternoon, late in the afternoon on November 4th, 1980. And certainly all the polls had not closed, certainly not the polls on the West Coast, but they had already called the election for Ronald Reagan. I had a dear friend who, upon the election of Ronald Reagan, she said, "Well, I cannot live in this country and I have to leave." So she left and for several years lived outside of the United States. That was probably the first presidential election I was aware of where it was said, "This is the most consequential election in your lifetime," 1980. Fast forward 44 years later, and we are also hearing the political pundits talking about the most consequential presidential election in our lifetime. And certainly many of the reports we have been reading and seeing testify to the importance of this election, but also reveal how people are feeling about the future, about the present, and where we are headed towards in the future as a nation, as a world. For those of you who were able to listen to the broadcast, the news broadcast just before this program, they shared the angst and the concerns of people throughout the nations about the election and what it will mean for the world. There's a certain nervousness or uncertainty that many people are feeling at this time. Certainly, unlike 1980, where things were settled relatively quickly, as I recall, in terms of the election and President Jimmy Carter conceding the election, things went the way people expected in terms of the transition, in terms of moving forward. In recent years, certainly this is the third presidential election, there has been, in my sense, and a heightened sense of nervousness, of uncertainty, and this has been magnified certainly by the rhetoric and the actions of principals around different campaigns. A concern that people have and people continue to have is what will happen next. And unlike 1980, we are uncertain about what will happen. We will not know who is elected president for for a while, probably several days, if not more. And there are things people are concerned about and worry about. A question I have for you today is, what are you doing to prepare for the election and the days following the election? And how are you preparing to have conversation with family and friends over the holidays? We've had some experience of this, so I'm curious about how people navigate the minefields of family discussions during holidays after a heated political battle. Give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. 503-231-8187. Those are just a couple of thoughts I shared with you this morning. You may have others, and we will expand it a little bit later. But let's go to a caller. Santiago, good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing great, Cecil. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right.
Good, good. Yeah, I mean, preparing, I guess, for me is just recognizing, you know, this, you know, just being realistic about it. I mean, the fact of the matter is I really feel like Kamala's going to win, but it shouldn't be this close. It should, I mean, you know, I keep saying it, like, if she was really the clear choice, then the race shouldn't be this close. But all the polls that I've been reading have Kamala within the margin of error, edging out on Trump, but neither of them have a full 50% of the vote. And what I'm seeing is that like 60% of the people who are voting this year are dissatisfied with both candidates. And that's at least 50% of people pretty close are dissatisfied with both candidates. And you know, I think it's a really good thing to see, because I mean, it really just kind of spits in the face of these Democratic organizations that have been really trying to prop up Kamala Harris as this clear antidote to Trump, when in fact she's not. And I mean, you look at a lot of her policies, she's not. I mean, at this point, we're just plugging the dam.
Yes.
You know, they're both negative campaigning, essentially. Like, well, Trump is like, well, you know, Kamala Harris is a communist, and Kamala Harris is like, well, Trump is a fascist.
Right.
And, you know, but they're not really offering anything to the people of substance, which I think for the Republican crowd really doesn't matter as much, because they're pretty hogged up on just being, you know, on, yeah, I mean, they didn't pick Trump for policy. You know, they picked him because he's a loudmouth and says a lot of racist stuff.
Right. So how do you with your analysis of you know, the candidates and your observation that many people are dissatisfied with both candidates, how do your circle, do you imagine your circle of families or friends will continue these discussions or conversations over the holidays? Or are they heated? Are people concerned? Or do people throw stuff at one another? How will people talk about these things in the Santiago household?
Well, I mean my partner and my mother-in-law are, you know, they voted for Kamala, so you know, I mean, I know where they stand on that. I mean, I think my mother-in-law is a little bit more of a, she's, you know, she considers herself a liberal Democrat, and you know, like, even when I would be like making jokes about Joe Biden, was not, you know, very happy. It's like, you know, it's just like for, I mean, I feel like she's kind of like a lot of liberals, and then like she's just, you know, she's just fine as long as things aren't like terrible. She's not really into the analysis of what we're really looking at in a long-term trajectory. Mm-hmm. And I mean, outside of my household, I mean, it's pretty much like anarchist and communist that I run with. And, okay. You know, a lot of them are concerned because, I mean, because Kamala, while she is running as a standard Democrat, has really broken away from a lot of like what is considered traditional Democrat politics, like the fact that she's emphasizing having the most lethal fighting force on the planet.
Right. I would say that to go along with what your observation about the vice president and her political leanings, that she is. Unfortunately, in my perspective, pretty standard Democrat these days. So that, you know, what I heard from you since, you know, progressive Democrats, those are people on the outside for the most part. And the people who get voice and vote are mainstream Democrats. So you had Obama, you had Clinton, and now you have Harris. So you're not going to have progressives very much as major party candidates. So,
well, you know, and I think that that's pretty wild because I mean it was progressives and socialists who really pushed for, who really made the loudest noise mm-hmm. about dumping Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yes.
I mean when he had his famous flub, I mean it was, the writing was on the wall. I mean the fact is that the call got loud enough that the donors heard it and said, hey, get this dude out of here. So the fact that like we're essentially like a lot of like the political tastemakers, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, that they need to feel like it's funny how they feel like they need to capitulate to the base only as much that people feel placated, but not so much that they feel taken care of or satisfied.
Right. Hey, yeah. I'm going to give you a couple of more seconds because there's someone else behind you. I appreciate your calls, and I really appreciate you hanging out with like-minded people, so you won't be throwing food at one another over the holiday meals.
Well, you know, I mean, the fact of the matter is even some of the liberal friends I got, you know, it's like, I mean, some of them are just like, it still feels like a hostage vote.
Yeah.
You know, because there's people, I think especially in the post-COVID era, people are a lot more sensitive, you know, especially if your politics come from a place of care, that we really should be thinking a lot bigger than ourselves. But our politics are kind of forcing us inward, you know, where we talk about, you know, like how we need to stop Trump. But like I said before, you know, Ralph Ware, the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, put it really well. You know, he said, you know, fascism and imperialism are two sides of the same coin. Stopping Trump will only stop fascism, but imperialism is fascism that we're exporting. And as long as we're still operating as an imperialist power, it gives the ability for a fascist to rise, because the inside will eventually match the outside if you give it long enough.
Very good words. Hey, thank you so much, and thank you for sharing this morning. I hope you have a great day. Thank you, Santiago.
I hope you do too, Cecil. Take care.
You as well. And you're listening into More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott. We're talking about politics, elections, or something that you want to talk about. Let's hear what James has to say this morning. Good morning, and thank you for waiting.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for taking my call. Kamala Harris is a George Bush, Dick Cheney neocon. The neocons were getting too much heat in the Republican Party, so they've jumped over to the Democratic Party. Expect World War III, mass murder, mass famine if Kamala gets into.
Hey, let me ask you. You said the talking about the neocons, and just in terms of history, I think maybe they're returning to the Democratic base. You know, I think the neocon, a lot of the neocons in the 1970s and 80s were Democrats who were sort of felt pushed out by the progressives, people that the previous caller was talking about in terms of the base of the party. So you had people like, what was her name, Madge Dexter, I can't recall her name, who was a neocon Democrat who worked for Ronald Reagan. And so maybe Kamala Harris and also a poster boy of neocon Democrats was the former senator from the state of Washington, Scoop Jackson. So maybe they're just coming, returning home.
Why is George Bush and Dick Cheney supporting Kamala?
Oh, I'm just saying that your observation about neocons. I'm saying that their base, their original base, was the Democratic Party, and they are returning to the Democratic Party. They many of them.
Cecil.
Yes.
There's something that you need to understand.
Oh, and you're going to tell me? Okay.
What is a progressive? A progressive is someone who shares a loose constructionist interpretation of the American Constitution.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, at the time of the founding, there was two factions. There were two major factions. There were the anti-federalists, who advocated for federalism, and then there was the nationalists. And the nationalists referred to those who advocated for the federal constitution as anti-federalists, but they were actually federalists. So what the deal is?
Okay, you're not making yourself clear. I wait a second. I'm looking at my engineer, and he has making faces because I don't understand what you're saying, and they apparently don't understand. So
progressives are nationalists.
Okay. Oh, right. All right. That's your point. Progressives are nationalists, and
progressives are nationalists. They are when you expand the role of the federal government beyond its constitutional limitation, the government by default becomes nationalistic and totalitarian. All power shifts from the people to the fascist state.
Okay, thank you, James. And you've been listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. And I'm Cecil Prescott, and we just had a conversation with James, and I was a little bit frustrated, and I admit my part in it because it wasn't clear the point you were making. You began a conversation about the Democratic nominee for president and the argument that she is a neocon, which I understood and I agree with. And I made an observation that many of the neocons who went to the Republican parties in the late 80s, in the 1980s and 70s, were Democrats, Cold War Democrats, such as who were very conservative in terms of foreign policies, such as Scoop Jackson, and somewhat liberal in terms of domestic policies. But then, unfortunately, we got to a place where we were unable to communicate with one another clearly. And again, I was looking at my engineer who wasn't quite sure able to follow our argument. So we'll pause for a second. Maybe at another time, James and I will return to that conversation. But in the meantime, I invite you to give us a call, 503-231-8187. Give us a call, your reflection on the elections. And I have to admit to you that I may be the only person in Multnomah County who, well, not really, because I saw something recently that a lot of you also have not voted yet, so if you're planning to vote, you have until tomorrow to vote. But anyway, I'm one of those who has have failed to submit their ballot yet. Because I thought I was being very intentional about being very careful about the candidates and the propositions we have to vote on. And then I came across some things that just threw me, and I need some assistance. So, you know, I understand that oftentimes that in races that they are uncontested. So I understand. And in a lot of races for judges, they are uncontested. I understand that. Although I did see one race where it was contested, so I don't know what I'm going to do with that. And now this is where I need your help. There are contested elections all up and down the ballot. And then when I was filling out my ballot, I saw something for the Urban Flood Safety and Water Quality District. And those, one of those districts' elections is contested. So I got my voter's guide out, and I'm still confused. So if you have an opinion, not on the Democratic or the Republican candidate for president or any other offices, but if you want to say how you feel about the Urban Flood Safety and Water Quality District, position 3 or position 2, let me know. Let's hear what our next caller has to say. Frances, good morning. How are you? Did you vote yet?
Hi. How are you? Yes, I did. I voted early, which I don't normally do.
Oh, okay.
But I did last week. And I agree with Santiago that we're kind of being held hostage here. But to me, a priority, and I believe it's happening all over the country, is women's agency.
Mm-hmm.
And like when Reagan was elected, Roe was already in effect. So right now, that is a priority to me. I think that is the case for a lot of women. And we have a problem with what's happening in Gaza. And, you know, the women over there have zero agency. They're lucky if they survive. But I believe that the military-industrial complex is kind of overwhelming everything right now. And I hope that when Ms. Harris becomes president, that at least there'll be room for conversation and discussion about how we should go with all that. I don't know that it would happen at all if Donald became president, and it would become a lot worse for everyone, especially women.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that people realize what that means for women. I mean,
yeah. Say something more, expand, please.
Well, the fact that a woman, I don't think that it's really anybody's business what a woman does if she discovers she's pregnant. I think that's her business alone, and everyone else should just stay out of it, unless she wants to consult family members or someone like that, and a doctor. I don't understand why we think we need to legislate a medical condition. I thought we had laws about privacy.
Yeah.
And medical privacy is privacy. Privacy.
Right.
Period.
I saw a political ad, and I may mention last week, that reminded me of what you just said in terms of women agency. And the ad had women voting, and it would say, you know, the one place where women still can make their independent choices was in the ballot, you know, to vote. And I think it was sort of pressing the point you was making in terms of women's agency. Do you think that women what do you think? How women will vote this year is will that be a motivating factor?
Mm-hmm. I believe that it is for a lot of women, and I believe it is for a lot of Republican women, and I believe, and I've heard
yes.
of women who have not just, they just don't say, but they go vote for Kamala because, I mean, I don't understand how someone can think that they have the audacity to say that whether they like it or not, I'm their press protector. That sounds like way back when and whenever, you know.
Yes.
But I think that I saw someone was telling me about a documentary where someone went back into time and was talking to women's like in
yes.
Martha Washington's days and things, uh-huh. and women handled it themselves. It wasn't something that to be discussed in the public. It was something, like they had a pretend interview with a woman, I think it was Martha Washington, and they asked her what she thought about it, and she said, well, that's something that you discuss at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that's out in the public. If you want to, it's just a private matter.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and I saw a pie chart that mm-hmm. said reasons women have abortions. And each little section of the pie chart said, none of your business.
Yes, yes.
And that's pretty much, I mean, who gets to decide what a woman does with her body? I mean, that's, you know, meanwhile, they're bombing babies with 2,000-pound bombs. Yeah. You know, it makes no sense. It's illogical. It's ridiculous.
Well, thank
and
you.
And that's yeah. what I'm hoping, you know, Cori Bush and Jamal Bowman both got lost in the primaries because Democrats financed their opposition because they were labeled anti-Semitic. And to me, it is anti-Semitic to use the horror of the Holocaust as an excuse or justification for genocide.
So. Well, yeah. Well, thank you.
We could go on.
Yeah, we can, but I appreciate you raising those.
Thank you
so much, Frances, for raising the points this morning, talking about women's agency and also talking about genocide and what's happening in Gaza and Lebanon and elsewhere. You're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. I don't think it's Cori Bush. I think it's another Cori. Good morning, Cori.
Good morning. Yes, not Cori Bush.
Okay.
Okay. Good to hear from you. I'll keep it brief. I think with Frances, she made some pretty good statements, but I am looking at white women voters. I think that if Vice President Harris loses, it's the psychology of having lived in Portland and having lived in a place called Eastmoreland
mm-hmm.
and having neighbors who one minute would vote for Obama and the next minute would vote for Trump.
Yeah.
I think it's going to come down to that. On one hand, for the first time, you had something taken away from
mm-hmm.
especially white women, which was the choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so they might show up because you've taken something away from them. But on the second hand, there is this psychological complicity where white women want safety. And they know that if I can get safety from a white man, then I'm going to vote with that white man who is my partner. I'm going to vote lockstep with him because this provides me safety from the other. And so we'll see tomorrow, mm-hmm. actually, you know, or Wednesday, if what is going to supersede what? Is it going to be the agency that you've lost, or is it going to be that safety to where, you know, I would prefer having safety, you know, if it's voting for Trump, at least I'm safe, but then I really don't care about the other groups of women or people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I live in Seattle. I see it up here, too. I have, you know, we have people who are in our lives that are, who've been very quiet lately, we notice. Or like,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had
right.
we had dinner this weekend, like, so what's up?
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing. I don't feel, you know, I don't know if I feel safe because it's misogyny, but this is coming from women. So I think that, and I hate saying this, but many women, and especially white women, have been socially conditioned to lean more towards that safety. But I think that the fact that you took agency away from them probably also makes them feel unsafe. So we're going to see, because I think that we're going to see if that's going to be enough to piss them off, or it's basically the opposite, to where I don't mind giving up some rights as long as I feel safe.
Yeah, I saw something. I appreciate what you're just saying in your observation about the call for white women, where they stand up. So often we hear how black women save America all the time, and sort of like, okay, white folks, white women, it's up to it's your call now. Are you gonna? Where do you stand? So we'll see.
Exactly, because I remember living in Portland in 2016, and I remember the Women's March right downtown. I was there, mm-hmm. and it was those white women basically. I worked at Bud Clark Commons, and I remember mm-hmm. how the police used to treat the trans women, mm-hmm. and yet you had women there who were like high-fiving the cops. I'm like, no, that cop is basically abusing her at night. So it's just like, yeah, it's either going to be realistic or performative. And I live in between Portland and Seattle. I live in both cities, basically, and we're going to see if it's going to be that performative allyship, which we've Portland, Seattle, you see it everywhere, or is it going to be real? And is it going to be real enough to where people are like, okay, you took away something that my grandmother had, now I don't have, or I'm just going to fall back into that safety mode where at least I know I'm safe, even if everybody else is kind of messed over.
All right. Well, I think I'm safe. Well, thank you so much, Corey. And I just, yeah, we'll see what happens, because I hope people don't realize or think of Mr. Trump is their protector, whether they want it or not. But we'll
exactly.
see. Okay, thank
right,
you so much.
You.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. I am Cecil Prescott, and we'll go to our next caller, Arthur. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning, Cecil. Good to hear your voice. Childbirth is not just a female issue. That's a family issue. I suggest instead of, we should shift the picture away from just women being concerned about Roe v. Wade. I think we need a men's march, maybe men with children, because that's, pro-choice is not just for women to choose. That's for men. That's a family issue. And I'd like to see more men taking a more of an active role. And by the way, Cecil, I'm still wearing my Israel Murders Children T-shirt every time I go shopping.
Okay.
So I just want to make that point that the men...
Yes.
This is not a female-only issue. This is important for all family planning. It's not... And right. almost all women that I've spoken to, they don't take abortion lightly. I mean, that's a emotionally fraught operation there. But so, mm-hmm. I think the men need to step up a little bit and see what they can contribute. Can you comment on that while I'm off the air, please?
Thank you so much for calling and for your perspective. And certainly true. When you were talking about family planning is a family issue that it involves all of us. And I was reminded of horrible stories I heard recently from women who have died because they were not able to access the health care they needed and died because of abortion bans in their state. And the father, and one incident I'm thinking of, the father left with a small child to without a mother because the mother died because she wasn't able to access the care she needed, and certainly it's a responsibility for all of us, and hopefully we'll understand that. Thank you so much, Arthur, for your point. You're listening to More Talk Radio, and let's listen to our next caller. Roger, good morning, Roger.
Good morning, Cecil. I totally agree with Arthur and Francis, as usual. The government should not have any say whatsoever in the abortion issue. It should be 100% private. You asked about the urban flood safety water quality districts.
Yes.
Okay, so the one that's contested, I guess, is 3, and we chose Kayla Drodst-Calkins for her, based on the voter pamphlet statement, which I thought that was very good. In District 2, Ariana Johnson, who says she's passionate about using nature-based solutions to create a more climate-resilient and equitable floodplain like that. And in District 4, Nick Lane, similarly, was very energized to learn the Urban Flood Safety Water Quality District has an expanded mission to integrate equity, nature-based solutions, cultural history, and climate change preparedness into flood safety practices. So those all impressed us, so we both voted for those positions. I don't know if those are the ones you were particularly interested
in.
Lori Stegman in number one.
Right. Hey, you know, Roger, you are getting the Citizenship Award today.
Thank you for
doing this. You know, I got my voter pamphlet right here in front of me, and I'm taking what you said under advisement, and thank you so much. And that's just a reminder that, you know, we get these pamphlets mailed to us, so you can read them online, but there is so much information that you need, especially because I had no idea what an urban flood safety and water quality district person did. So
right. Well, on the same sort of thing, I mean, what, you know, the ballot was much more complicated this year, obviously, because we had, I live in District 3, and we have something like 20 candidates running for 3 positions and stuff.
Right, yes.
The mayors, we had like 20 people running. I went very much on environmental ideas that people had, thinking about global warming as a factor, and housing, very much favored candidates that were supportive of housing everybody, as opposed to just a night shelter where you get a pad on a floor of a church overnight from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m., then you're out in the street. And I think the reason that certain people like Keith Wilson and everybody are big on that solution is because they need to satisfy the Idaho statement that you need to have shelter for everyone before you can ban camping, so that they by meeting that that criteria, they say, okay, we've solved the homeless problem, we've got everybody off the street from 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. and we've got rid of those unsightly camps, and people can just go out in the rain during the day, and you know, that's tough luck. And I disagree with that. I think we need to do everything possible to get people housed off the street, you know, 24/7.
Okay, well, good. One thing that I'm hearing from you, that I'm learning from you, one is, you know, how important it is to be a thoughtful citizen. And also, you know, your observation about, you know, city council and the mayor's race, but particularly in city council, you identify certain themes that were important to you, and so you looked at the candidates to see where they lined up with those themes. And I think that is a good way, especially with the city council district, where you have 3 representatives in each district. It might be good to say, well, what are their priorities, and what are things that they can agree on, and where do they align with my values? So thank you go ahead.
And experience. I mean, you know, like Rex Burkholder, for instance, has, you know, 7 years on Metro Council, and he's running for a position in District 3, so I absolutely voted for him as my first choice. But and I know what his values are, so I'm happy to vote for him. You know, it's difficult. I don't like most of the front runners. These, you know, people like Rene Gonzalez and Keith Wilson and Mingus Maps.
But that's why there's 17 other people to vote for.
Yeah, I really like Liz Ostroos. I thought her statement in the voter's pamphlet was fantastic, mm-hmm. and I think she's got the, you know, a great spirit. And we said maybe she should be the next Bud Clark.
I was wondering. Maybe she would be, and I think, you know, Bud Clark is a good example because he came out of nowhere, certainly wasn't part of the political establishment when he was elected mayor. So,
and he was a great mayor.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for your show, Cecil.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for KABU. And what I really appreciate is that KABU interviewed all the candidates and makes that information available yes. on your website. I think that's fantastic. Thank you for doing that.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much.
Listen to other callers now. Thank you.
Okay. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We just finished having a conversation with Roger, who I think will get the citizenship award for today, because not only did he know, and I don't even know the name, what was it? District Water Something Soil District. He knew the name, and he knew the candidates, and he gave us an example of being a thoughtful voter to review the candidates, to read their statements, to see also the statements in the voter pamphlets that voters receive, and to do some research. It's not always the political seats and campaigns that get the most money that we should focus on. So certainly we should be concerned about federal offices, who our congressional representatives are, who will sit in the Senate, and who will be the president. But also local races are important, not only the high-profile ones such as county and city commissioners, but school districts and other important things we ought to be aware of. And as our last caller, as all of our callers have shared this morning, how important it is to be an informed citizen. So if you believe that voting is something that is part of the social contract that we agree to do to live in this society, part of the work we have to do is educate ourselves about the issues, about the candidates, and to be able to make sense of what may seem to be nonsense. There's lots of information out there, and we have to spend time to read and get the information we need. Our last caller mentioned KABU interviewed dozens of candidates, and you can go on our website to hear the interviews with the candidates that are running for local offices. And that is one of the ways in which you can educate yourself and to learn more about the issues that are important to you. And then we'll see what happens. It all depends on what happens and our response. What do you think will be the response to your community to the elections? Are people optimistic? One caller mentioned their belief that one candidate for president might win. Some people believe someone else might win. How does that make you feel? How is your body feeling? I woke up this morning and was like, you know, that felt a little tension, and then I just realized I was election nervousness and just had to stop and breathe and know that life goes on and we have so much to do and so much work to do. Let's not be carried away by the myth that activities on one day out of the year are so important that other activities are no longer important. Yes, voting is important. And certainly when I was growing up, a family involved in civil rights and the importance of having the right to vote. And it was drilled within us that you had to vote because that was your responsibility as a citizen. But also, as your responsibility as a community member, is that taking care of the community is more than voting one day a year. It's being informed. It's listening, attending city council, county council meetings, staying informed on the issues, going to town halls when your representatives have them, going to your neighborhood association meeting, speaking to your school district representatives. There's so much to do, and I hope that we all recognize that being a responsible community member is something that we do more than one day a year when we drop our ballot in. It's something that is part of who we are and what we want to be. So this election cycle, as every election cycle, let's be determined to work for what I believe is the common good. I am impressed and enthralled by what I hear by so many people who are members of this community who continue to research, to find out the answers, and to ask the questions. It's hard work, but it's important work. So I guess I will, when I finish this program, I will finish filling out my voter's ballot. I, with your advice, and you know, I'm not endorsing any candidate, especially I will not tell you who to vote for the Urban Flood Safety and Water Quality District. I know, but there are regulations. There are regulations, and you know, I cannot make an endorsement, but there are so many important things you could do, and it's just amazing. You know, just listen. So for this one person, Urban Flood Safety and Water Quality District, this is in your voter pamphlet. Read it. You know, this one person, the occupation, the day job is a philanthropy program officer. Another person, their job is a retail consultant. And they want to spend, you know, a little bit more of their free time to be a responsible citizen by being a member of the Urban Flood Safety and Water Quality District. And some of you might think I'm making fun. I'm not. I am really impressed that people take the time to do the research, to knock on the doors, to go to those meetings, to do the studies. Not because there is something for them, but it's because of what they believe is for the community. I still believe that most people, many people who are committed to public service are public servants. And so those of you who are running for elections, good for you. Let's go to our next caller and hear what Stu has to say. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning. I just wanted to call in and give a shout out to all the poll workers and the folks working at the elections office.
Yes.
I'm sure a lot of people like me messed up their address changes and whatnot and didn't manage to get a ballot. And I just popped down to the elections office and had them print me off a replacement ballot. And it was super easy and they were really nice. And so anyone out there who's feeling like, oh shoot, I messed up and I didn't get my ballot, you can still go grab one, and they're real friendly and it's easy. And so yeah, that's just what I wanted to do, is celebrate all the folks who are helping make sure that we can participate in this process. With all its flaws and shortfalls, it's still something we gotta do.
Indeed. Hey, thank you so much, Stu, and I did thank you that you had that good experience and reminding us for that and commending those who are election workers.
Yeah, thanks for doing your show.
Hey,
I'll go out there. Thanks.
Okay, thank you so much, Stu. And Stu just gave a shout-out to all those who are working in many, many offices, many polling places this election season. And for those of you who are doing that, thank you so much. You know, speaking personally from my family history, my grandmother and my mother were poll workers. I talked to my sister who you know, continuing that tradition, and she'll be a poll worker. She told me that she'll be at the polls from 5 a.m. until 9 p.m. on election days. And you know, those of you who are doing work like that, you know, volunteering your time to do the work, helping people who, you know, are confused by, you know, how to mark their ballot, as Stu commended us, reminded us. Those of you who are, I think, are the unsung heroes of this so-called democratic experience, in that it is what we do as ordinary citizens that make us who we are. And as my granddaddy used to always say, especially when he was in an argument, he was an immigrant, he used to say, I am an American citizen. So exercise your right as an American citizen and do what, and vote. Let's go to our next caller. Jabbar, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, I live in Vancouver, but when I was going through the initiatives and knew none of them, I just popped two words that were descriptive into Google, and a few answers would come up, and that was enough to be able to make my decision.
Hey, okay, excellent.
And then also, remember, you don't have to answer all the questions. You can only put in the president, and it's still good to go.
Uh-huh. Very good. Hey.
Thanks, Cecil.
Hey, thank you so much. And goodbye. So all of you who, you know, are still puzzled or still wondering about voting, you know, there's still time to enjoy this wonderful, wonderful experience. So make sure you drop your ballot in by tomorrow, and if you're voting. And for all of us, whether we're voting or not voting, we remain in community with one another, with those we agree with politically and those we disagree with politically. But we are one community, and we need to find ways to not only to voice our opinions, but to hear those with different voices, and to recognize that all voices are heard, and that all persons are valued, and that regardless of where we are or what we think, we are one community. So, whether you're an anarchist or not, or communist or Republican or Democrat, whether you are, you know, live in Vancouver or Gresham or Brookings or, I don't know, somewhere else, we're all one human community. Stay tuned here on KBOO for your community radio station and how we work together. I'm Cecil Prescott. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself and your community.
Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements.